I think it's part of our Anabaptist identity and our Anabaptist DNA, if you will, to have issues with the concept, the reality of power. Power certainly is a reality that has been abused in our world and in our churches for millenniums. The history of the world and the church is sadly defined almost by power that is used and power that is abused to accomplish nefarious ends. Whether it was Pharaoh in the Old Testament who heaped injustice upon injustice on the heads of the Israelites to accomplish his goals, an abuse of power. Or Hitler, who abused power to commit genocide against the Jewish people. To Putin in this very moment, who seems bent on using power to reduce Ukraine to rubble. For what end still seems unclear, but what does seem certain is that there is a tremendous abuse of power. History seems to be written based on humankind's abuse of power. And in one response historically within the church has been to ban power. We just won't have power. Power is the problem. Power is bad. Power is wrong. Let's ban power. When I was in seminary in Denver, there was a church that sprung up kind of almost out of nowhere, and it was the power-free church. There was to be absolutely no power, whether that be in structural form, such as elders and councils and things of that nature, or pastors, or orders of worship that could be an expression of power by someone. They gathered on Sunday mornings for whatever would happen in what they referred to and called the power-free church. By my third year in seminary, it had largely imploded and died. Power. I experienced power this morning when I came in. I turned all the lights on. Seemed like a reasonable thing to do. Teresa went and turned them all off. And she appealed to a source of power. Not her own, but she said, we had a poll, and the poll said, lights off, not lights on. So it wasn't an abuse of power. It wasn't a misuse of power. But in a playful, funny kind of way, it was a appropriate use of power. John doesn't get to come in and turn the lights on when everybody who was gathered here decided they liked it more with the lights off. I'm going to tape them next time. I'm going to tape each and every one of them. Okay? So power. In Scripture, it begins with references to power. All of those references in Genesis 1 about God, in essence, dividing this reality and creating something was about power, because if you don't have power, you can't do that. But almost immediately, in terms of God's relationship with humankind, God gives humankind power. Almost the first spoken reality relative to humankind, to this reality of Adam and Eve, is that they will exercise dominion over everything God has created. They're given power. Now, I don't like that word dominion. Unfortunately, that is the word that was used in the King James, and it's just stuck And even though in the footnotes and NIV and RSV and all the modern translations will say this is not a good word. Because when we think of dominion, we think of domination and we think of bad things. And I think the environmental movement is right that people have seen that word dominion and assumed it means I exercise domination over everything. And that's my God-given power and right. Walter Brueggemann, one of the greatest Old Testament scholars, and almost every Old Testament scholar has fallen in line with the reality that there is one word that is used to describe this reality of leadership, of power, of dominion. There's one word that's used throughout the Old Testament, and it's used to describe God, who in loving kindness shepherds and leads God's people. The very same word is used then to describe the Pharaoh and all of the different kings of the Babylonians and Assyrians who use that power to dominate, control, and oppress people. And Brueggemann just asked the simple, rhetorical, obvious question, which use do you think God was using for humankind in Genesis 1? That you subdue and control and dominate and even oppress, or that you join with God in a gracious and kind, loving shepherding of all of reality? The answer is clear. But when you state that, you get accused of revisionist history, when really you're being an originalist. Because that's what the passage is emphasizing. And so this concept that power in and of itself is in some way, shape, or form wrong is wrong. Power was ordained from the very beginning and given to humankind to exercise. The issue isn't whether or not power is right or wrong, it's how we use power that becomes right or wrong. And there is a lovely sort of way in which these materials talk about this concept of power over and power with. And that, at a certain level, is an excellent way of understanding what God is trying to teach us relative to the concept of power. The passage from the Gospel of Luke that James and Samantha read for us this morning is actually only half. It's only half the passage that was assigned for this Sunday in the lectionary. This Sunday has the single longest reading for all Sundays in the lectionary. The passage that I didn't have them read is the long passage of Luke 22 that's right before, of course, Luke 23. In Luke 22, we witness perhaps Jesus's most important teaching relative to this concept of power. And let's recognize right off the bat that Jesus doesn't say, be power free, deny power. Power itself is wrong. That's not at all what Jesus says. In Luke 22, we're told that a dispute arose between the disciples regarding which one of them was the greatest. Okay? Clearly, the metric for measuring which one of them was the greatest had to do with who possessed the greatest power, the greatest measure of control over other people. Because that is immediately where Jesus goes with this discussion relative to the issue of power. Is he, in essence, lays out before them two different approaches, two different understandings of how they can exercise and use power. They could be like the kings of the Gentiles who lorded over, which has that concept of control and domination, of in essence reducing other people, other human beings, to just mere means to your ends, just reducing a person to a mere cog in a wheel. I know you don't like it when I bring up philosophers, but Immanuel Kant, Jen will recognize this perhaps immediately, but Immanuel Kant introduced something that he called the humanity formula. And Immanuel Kant, apparently as a young child, was drugged to church, even though he didn't want to go, didn't believe in any of it. And they believe that this humanity formula may have been inspired by at least some of the things he heard and some of the things that perhaps his mother said to him. And the humanity formula simply said, you can never reduce another person to a mere means to an end. In other words, don't use people. Don't use people. And that's what Jesus is outlining here. At the absolute heart of power over is using people to accomplish your ends. Reducing another human being to a mere means to an end. That's power over. And Jesus, in essence, condemns that form of power. The power that Jesus calls for and authorizes, he says, in this passage is the power of the youngest. See, and I can really identify with that. I was the youngest in my family. I understood what it meant to have power exercised over you as the youngest. And so he appeals to the youngest, to the least, to the weakest, to the one who serves as opposed to the one who is served. And Jesus introduces this concept of power that is focused on servanthood. It's focused on actually serving other people, helping other people, lifting other people up, as opposed to exercising control over people and using them. That's this dynamic that Jesus wants to introduce. Now, of course, this idea of exercising power with others for Jesus is ultimately focused on God's will, God's ends, God's goals for humankind. Now, it's interesting that in the Gospel of Luke, Luke takes this story about this discussion, this dispute among the disciples, and he moves it to right here. If you look in Matthew and Mark, the same story appears much earlier, and it has to do with power within the family of God. Okay? That's why in Matthew and Mark's version of the story, it's James and John, and who comes with them? Mom. Which may have been Jesus' aunt. It's all about power in the family and in the family of God and how that works itself out. The focus here is a little bit different. Here, Luke appears to want to compare and contrast two different forms of power that exist not only within the church but within the world, and to contrast them. Because what Luke then does in Luke 23 is really get into the issue of how people exercised power. So in Luke 23, you see this reality of these different groups of people and the power that they possess, and literally the power games and the power struggle that takes place. So Jesus is arrested. That's about power. He's not playing the game they want played. He's threatening the very power of the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the Sanhedrin by calling into question everything that they stand for and everything that they do, especially their abuse of power. And they exercise their power and they have him arrested. trumped up, meaningless charges, but they have him arrested. Now, they have the power to do that, and they have the power to hold him, but they don't have the power to kill him. That power rests with Pilate, and Pilate greatly enjoys that power. And so almost as if Pilate is slapping their wrists, reminding them of who is really in control here, they bring him to Pilate. In essence, on these trumped up charges, Pilate knows the whole thing is trumped up. Almost everything was trumped up with them. And it's brought before them. And what does he do? He says, I'll hold him for a day and turn him loose. He's going to have to spend a night in jail, then he'll go free the next day. And he's reminding the Sanhedrin of the power that he has and the power that they lack. It's all about power. Now, the power game's not over, because then they pull out their trump card, their ace up the sleeve, and their ace up the sleeve is, well, he says he's a Messiah. He says he's the King of the Jews. And you asked him that, and you got kind of a veiled answer. So what do you think Caesar's going to do? This gets to Caesar. This gets to Rome. What is Caesar going to have to say about this? That you are harboring and protecting an insurrectionist? That's serious now, because Pilate's authority entirely comes from Caesar from Rome. And of course, it goes then to Herod, then back to Pilate. And it's one big exercise of power. And then you even see the crowds get in on the act, because they literally utilize the power of the mob to persuade Pilate to have Jesus put to death. And they choose an insurrectionist and a murderer. And understand something, because that is one of the most interesting parts about this, because it gets at the issue again, power. What the Jewish people wanted in a Messiah was not somebody who was going to ride into town on a donkey while children waved palm branches. What they had always wanted was somebody who was going to ride into Jerusalem with the power of the sword, mounted on a stallion, and oust Rome. What they had always wanted was an insurrectionist who would lead them in victorious battle, overthrowing Rome. Jesus never checked that box. And so consequently, they put him to death. But look at what they're given. And I don't think it's coincidental. I don't think it's ironic. I think it's intentional. They're given an insurrectionist and a murderer, because that's actually what they had wanted all along. And Pilate gives that to them. And they're contented, because what they wanted was someone who would exercise that kind of power. So power over. This concept of controlling and dominating and directing and manipulating. Sometimes power over is a very direct, hands-on reality of force and control and domination and literally reducing somebody to a means to an end and getting them to do what you want. Other times it's this passive aggressive manipulative, where you get that person to do what you want by whining. It's the same goal. It's the same objective. It's just a different way of utilizing power. And it's very manipulative. It's an abuse of power. But because it's comes in a different sort of package than the iron fist, it's not necessarily seen as a clear expression of power. But it's what it is. It's power. All of that directed at accomplishing an individual's goal or end. Power with is this concept of working first and foremost with God, which is what we see in Genesis 1. It's a partnership with God to exercise pastoral leadership. And I use the word pastoral, not referring to myself, but to that concept of the shepherd, the pastor. That's how power is described in the Old Testament when it's done right. It's the shepherd who kindly and gently leads and guides the people. And of course, you see, Jesus emphasized it in the Gospels as well. And Jesus' suffering throughout here is all about this kind of self-giving, self-sacrificing love that is power. John Howard Yoder, in his classic book, The Politics of Jesus, made the suggestion that the single greatest power in the world is the power of love. But we doubt that, so that we don't act and live from it. So this power over and this power with. I've been going through that fun, and that is complete sarcasm, going through the fun of filling out my MLI, my Minister Leadership Information Form. It's a mind-numbing process. And in there they ask about the issue of power. And they talk about five focuses of power within the average congregation. And how power can be used in a power with to accomplish gospel ends and goals, and how it can also be a power over that's used to accomplish an individual's goals. And they talk about the power of the pew person. And the pew person is that person who's sitting in the pew. They may think of themselves as someone who doesn't possess much power, but they probably very much so do. And they ask us to give illustrations of these, and we read illustrations of them. And one of the illustrations was of a woman in a very a rural, large Mennonite congregation. She was the matriarch of one of the largest families within that congregation. She could trace her lineage back to Peter Schumacher, the founder of that congregation, had a son and a grandson named Peter. And people would joke around, apparently, that Peter the Great, the founder of the church, lived on generation after generation after generation in each one of these Peters in her family. That's power. The pastor of that church said, "You didn't change the kind of toilet paper in the bathroom of her church. Never sat on a council, never sat on a board, never served on a commission. Very faithful to the congregation, but exercised an astronomical amount of power. Part of that was power of clan. Very real issue in Mennonite circles. There's the power of professionals. the power of professionals. In that one, they tell the story of a retired architect and in a church that was in the midst of doing a major remodeling project. And in this remodeling project, the church had the idea of, in essence, adding on to one side of their beautiful church, and that exterior wall would become an interior wall with lights that they would have coming into the sanctuary, and they very, very excited about it. And they asked that architect, and he rattled off all sorts of codes that was in violation of, they didn't do that. That's power. That's power of a professional who has certain skill sets. So they dropped that idea and planned on just building a covered breezeway to a second facility, and they're going to have to buy land and all that because of the breezeway and all that sort of stuff. And they hired Leroy Troyer, that Mennonite architect and contractor up in South Bend, Indiana. The first thing he said when he sat down was, "Why don't you just add on right to the side of the church? This would become an interior wall. Absolutely beautiful. We can put lights on it so that lights shine in on the back of the pulpit. Everybody's looking at it to be absolutely gorgeous." We're told we can't. Who told you that? Person who didn't want that done. That's an abuse of power. And it wasn't anybody in a position. Leaders and pastors can do that just as easily and just as often with this reality of power over rather than power with, and people who possess wealth. Those are the five that they talk about in history. But power. The goal isn't to rid power from the church, because power is not the problem. We are. And the abuse of power is the problem. And so understanding this concept, and that's what I love about this way they set this up. I thought it was absolutely brilliant because it gives you a baseline way of looking at it. Power over, power with. I think if we just step back and asked ourselves that simple question, whether I'm doing it directly or in a passive-aggressive, manipulative sort of manner, am I utilizing power with for this goal that we have as a body, or am I utilizing power over for a personal goal or even for a goal that the body has? Because we might have the right end, but the means, the power, be all wrong. And that taints it and undermines it entirely. So what are we exercising? What are we using? Are we power with, power over? As this church goes through that transition time, I'm just going to lay it out there. You see a lot of issues relative to power. You always do it. I saw it at Grace. I saw it at Napanee before that. You always see it. Because people are searching and they're wondering and they're questioning and they have ends that are good ends. And we got to wrestle with that issue. Is this manner, is this means of power one that is power with, or is it power over? As you all work through this reality of this transition. Because quite often the ends are not the problem. Great ideas, great insights, incredible, incredibly worthy things to explore. And I've seen the emails and read the emails, good stuff. And openly shared for people to wrestle with and question it. And that's all healthy and good. And it's part of the transition, and just dive into it. Have fun with it. Explore it. It's good. It's healthy. But as you do that, continue to come back and ask yourself, am I utilizing power with, or am I utilizing power over? Because even if the end is really, really good, sometimes we can mess it all up by the power we use. And that's my final, ultimate encouragement into the process that I don't have much to say about. Okay? But I loved what they did here, and I thought it was great. Power with, power over. Ask yourself that question.